Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we go through the new breaking news impeachment vote that is more partisan than any one that has come before it. And we also dive into my debate with Kyle Kulinski at Politicon, what I did well, what I could have done better. This is Charlie Kirk, host of the Charlie Kirk Show. Before we get started, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Press subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a review. Our success is made possible thanks to your support. You guys continue to give us those 5-star ratings and leave us those reviews. Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show, your home of conservative, libertarian, rational thinking. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Charlie Kirk Show. As I am recording this, I am watching the Radical Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, try to explain away this very partisan impeachment inquiry towards our president, President Donald Trump, the president who has delivered on so many promises for our country. So there's a lot of noise around this story, and I want to synthesize it and get straight to it. So basically, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called for this vote, and you juxtapose it to the 1998 impeachment of Bill Clinton that some people thought was questionable. But he did lie under oath, and he did lie about all the proceedings around that. And they were very specific U.S. criminal code that he broke and that the Starr investigation was able to uncover. So look, the 232 to 196 vote, which just happened today, saw two Democrats side with the GOP against the effort, marking a really stark difference than 1998, which was the last time Congress pursued impeachment. And I'm reading, paraphrasing from the Washington Times, Stephen Dinan, his piece. Just so you understand, 31 Democrats sided with Republican impeachment back in 1998 from a 257 to 176 vote, launching an inquiry into President Clinton's behavior. Republicans maintained remarkable unity in part to the process. They believe that the process that Mrs. Pelosi is leading is totally unfair. And look, the process is unfair. I mean, there has not been rights granted to the minority. Adam Schiff is running this total circus. And guess what? Impeachment is supposed to go through the Judiciary Committee, not the House Intelligence Committee. The reason they're giving it to Adam Schiff for the Intelligence Committee, for a lot of different reasons, most of which is that Jerry Nadler is not really able to run his committee as effectively as Adam Schiff. Now, Adam Schiff is a very questionable character. He has smeared and slandered the President of the United States. He misrepresented the phone call that President Trump had with Ukraine, the phone call that we have read the transcript of. And this impeachment is so partisan. This goes back to our general thesis that we've talked about on the Charlie Kirk Show, that the left is trying to undo the election of 2016. They tried it through the Mueller investigation. They tried it through the witch hunt, which was part of the Mueller investigation. Now they're trying it through this Ukrainian mess. But they also tried it through one other thing that we should not forget about. They tried to get electors. Remember when they tried to get electors in the Electoral College to vote against Donald Trump? Do you remember this? When they tried to get people in the Electoral College to actually defect against President Trump, and they did that. They have been talking about impeachment before this guy even got sworn into office. In fact, Mark Levin, the great one, who we had a podcast with before, and you can go back in the Charlie Kirk Show archives, we talked about this when he came on the Charlie Kirk Show, that this has been a targeted and concerted effort to try to destabilize and take out this amazing president. This is super partisan. Justin Amash voted for impeachment, but I wouldn't necessarily consider him to be a Republican. But there's something that a lot of people are missing. There are a lot of major questions around here, and I think that we in the Charlie Kirk Show have found some new green space that other people have not yet hit. But first, for those of you that love to work out, and for those of you that really want to get into the best shape possible, I know this personally because I had a really bad back injury back in January, and it's been kind of taking me out of my workout regimen the last 10 months. A lot of you know that it's not just about exercise, it's about diet, it's about lifestyle, and you should be able to have something that keeps you accountable, essentially a habit-changing solution. Whether you want to have physical goals made, psychological goals, or social goals, there's one app, there's one platform that I endorse called Noom, N-O-O-M. It gets you in great shape. It gets you in a great place psychologically. It can keep you on track with diet. It'll connect you with experts. No more hunting for training apps or workouts. Look, we're all strapped for time. You know, in the last week, I've been from Arizona to New Hampshire to Iowa, you name it. We're all strapped for time and we need an app that keeps it all together. And look, if you go off track, there's no shaming. And who does it? Noom does it. It's a great platform. So here's what you got to do. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, N-O-O-M. That's noom.com/Charlie. Look, no food is considered good or bad or off limits. Noom teaches moderation and can be used in conjunction with many pre-existing popular diets if you want. Noom is not just a diet. It's healthy and easy to stick to way of life. Start. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/Charlie to start your trial today. That's Noom.com/Charlie, the last weight loss program you'll ever need. So as we suspected on Tuesday's episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, the major question was going to be how many rights this resolution would be granted to President Trump and House Republicans. Would their due process be upheld? Well, here's what the resolution does that was just passed on very partisan basis by Speaker of the House, radical leftist Nancy Pelosi. It grants Rep. Adam Schiff's Intelligence Committee the lead role, which is highly unusual. Usually it's the Judiciary Committee. Now, the Judiciary Committee, which has usually led these sorts of proceedings in the past, as I mentioned, is now in a secondary spot, probably because of Jerry Nadler's inability to actually run a committee. And the great Candace Owens, former communications director at Turning Point USA, TPUSA.com, she made kind of an embarrassment and a fool out of him in his committee. All of you remember exactly what happened there. And if you don't, she essentially tossed him up and crossed him up, and he has not done a great job of running that committee. That's just a small example of how he has been lackluster in his ability to run a committee. So Byron York, who's very good on some things, he said in the Washington Examiner, the Adam Schiff Empowerment Act essentially is what this is all about. He said, quote, first thing the resolution will do is to give the impeachment investigation to the Intelligence Committee. Until now, three committees, Intel, Oversight, and Foreign Affairs, have been conducting impeachment interviews. Going forward, Oversight and Foreign Affairs will be out of the interview picture in favor of Intel. So among other things, that would mean that some Republicans, like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, who have been persistent critics of the process, but who have been allowed into depositions by virtue of their membership and other participating committees, two examples are Oversight Reps Jordan and Meadows, will no longer be allowed in the interview room. Look, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows are American heroes. They do such amazing work. In fact, let's play some sound of Jim Jordan in a recent presser. And look, this kind of feels like a big circus on Capitol Hill. Guess what? It is a circus. I want you to just hear some sound of Jim Jordan adding some truth to the conversation.
It is a sad day. It really is for this country. What the Democrats have put our nation through for now almost 4 years. You go back to July of 2016 when they opened an investigation into the president, then candidate Trump, and spied on two American citizens associated with the presidential campaign. I bet that has never happened in American history, but that happened in 2016. And all we went through with the whole Mueller thing, and now this today, this, as the whip has said, this entire sham process, it is four facts have never changed and they will never change. Four fundamental facts. We have the transcript. There is no conditions in the transcript. There's no quid pro quo in the transcript. Even the day after the call came out, Democratic chairmen were saying, well, there's no quid pro quo there, but we're going to keep on doing what they've been putting our country through. Second, the two individuals on the call both have said, President Trump, President Zelensky, have both said there was no pressure, no pushing, nothing. Third, the Ukrainians didn't know aid had been held up at the time of the phone call. And fourth and most important, what action did they take? What action did President Zelensky take or the Ukrainians take to ever free up the aid that was held up? They did nothing. No statement, no announcement of any type of event. Those facts have never changed, will never change, but they don't care.
Now, ahead of the resolution vote, Pelosi claimed that, quote, nobody came to Congress to impeach a president of the United States.
This is a sad day. It's a sad day because nobody comes to Congress to impeach a president of the United States. No one.
Oh, really? Let's fact check that. Speaker Pelosi, radical leftist from San Francisco, while your district is full of feces and is an unrecognizable mess. Let's fact check it. In April 2018, Rashida Tlaib claimed she deserved to be elected precisely so that she become a juror during the impeachment of President Trump. Well, guess what? It's the Senate that actually becomes the jury. So unless you were running for United States Senate in Michigan, I don't know what you're talking about, but she said this. Rashida Tlaib said this, and she's a member of the squad, the radical left-wing squad, where you have Tlaib, you have Presley, Omar, and Cortez. She said this, quote, I keep telling people this is about electing a jury that will impeach him, and I make a heck of a juror, end quote. Again, I've never heard anyone advertise themselves as a great juror. Usually a jury is supposed to be made up of regular, everyday people. I mean, I've heard people say they make themselves good prosecutors, but saying you're a good juror, I don't quite understand that. But then again, on the night she became a congresswoman or sworn in as one, Rep. Rashida Tlaib declared her support for impeachment in an expletive-filled rant. Rashida Tlaib said, basically, we're going to go in there. We're going to impeach the mother effer. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the other member of the squad, publicly has supported impeachment for at least as early as June 2018, months before she was elected. AOC said the following, quote, I would support impeachment. I think that, you know, we have the grounds to do it. No, I don't know. By the way, I can't stand when people say, you know, I don't. That's why I'm listening to you. So don't say that I know. Anyway, that's a small pet peeve. Ilhan Omar said she would vote for impeachment before she was elected in an interview with CNN's Van Jones. Van Jones said, you guys are going to be in a situation where you have to possibly take a vote on impeachment of Donald Trump. Would you vote yes or no? Ilhan Omar said, I would vote yes. Ayanna Pressley, which creates kind of the squad, all four of them, stated her intentions as early as September 2018. Ayanna Pressley said the following, quote, I look forward to partnering with many others to do whatever we can to get him impeached, end quote. This is exactly why they came to Congress. Make no mistake, the radicals came to Congress from all across the country in 2018 running on the idea of impeachment, running that they should impeach the president. In fact, the great one, Mark Levin, as I mentioned, found a clip that some people were talking about impeachment as early as spring of 2016. They were talking about impeachment as early as spring of 2016 that they should impeach this great president of the United States before he even became the official nominee, before he won the election, before he got sworn in. They have been floating this idea of impeachment out for some time. And I want to talk about who's really been pushing this impeachment fight, because this is not grassroots. This is not organic. It might have become somewhat organic, but this is astroturf. This is artificial. I'm going to tell you exactly what I mean. But did you know that recently over 100 million people had their personal information stolen in a data breach? Look, I get these alerts all the time. People are saying, oh, you know, you might have your email account compromised and some of it's spam and some of it is not. And it's kind of scary. I mean, social security numbers, contact deals, credit scores, and more are all taken. They were all taken from Capital One customers. You remember this Capital One breach? It was horrible. And there's a good chance that you were affected. I know some of my great friends were. These kinds of attacks are getting more and more frequent and more severe. It's not just Capital One, Equifax, Facebook, eBay, Uber, PlayStation, and Yahoo. They've all leaked passwords, credit card, and bank numbers belonging to billions of users. So I use one thing. Right now, as I'm doing this podcast in front of my computer and my phone, guess what I have? I have this thing called ExpressVPN. You can't control how big corporations mishandle your data, but you can protect yourself. ExpressVPN is an app for your computer and phone that encrypts and secures your data. If a breach can happen to Capital One, it can happen to you, right? They can get into your device. They can get into your email. They can find out all sorts of things. I never go online without ExpressVPN. And if you care about your privacy and safety, you shouldn't either. ExpressVPN connects with just one click. It's lightning fast and costs less than $7 a month. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN provider by TechRadar, CNET, The Verge, and countless others. So right now, use my special link, expressvpn.com/Charlie, right now to arm yourself with an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show and protect yourself. That's expressvpn.com/Charlie for 3 months free. I can't endorse this product enough. I use it right now. I use it all the time. expressvpn.com/Charlie. Again, that's expressvpn.com/Charlie. So this entire impeachment fight has been funded primarily, originally, by Tom Steyer. Do we remember Tom Steyer? I mean, this guy, he's a billionaire. He spent tens of millions of dollars on Democrat politics over the last couple of years, and he spent millions of dollars in the Trump era pushing the impeachment fight. In fact, he took out full-page ads in the New York Times. He created huge lists of grassroots donors spending millions and millions of dollars trying to push the impeachment of Donald Trump. And we have to remember that this was artificial at first. This is astroturf. The idea of impeachment has come from the top down. It's come from the wise men of Washington down. And this is just another tactic to take out this president. They failed with Mueller. They failed in the 2018 elections to try to get back to the United States Senate. So now they have to try something else to stop the Trump train, to stop the Trump success, and it is impeachment. And guess what? And the mainstream media was totally complicit. The Washington Post, 19 minutes after President Trump was sworn in, published an article with the following headline. You're not going to believe this. This was 19 minutes after he got sworn in. So President Donald Trump says, I do, you know, I will fully and faithfully execute all the duties of President of the United States. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but you get what I'm saying. And he gave that great speech and he gets into the motorcade. He's President of the United States. And, you know, he's supposed to be able to have a clear and confident direction that he can deliver on the promises for the American people. And then someone probably shows him an article from the Washington Post and says, quote, the campaign to impeach President Trump has begun. That's what he was. That's what they were writing 19 minutes after he was sworn in. This is a premeditated impeachment. Premeditated. It's not because they saw something that then triggered impeachment. And how it was with Andrew Johnson and Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was not impeached. He resigned. And Bill Clinton. There was actual news that came out that drove them to impeachment. Now, they're trying to say it was around Ukraine. That's a bunch of nonsense. This is a 3-year-long effort to remove a duly elected president from office and overturn the American people and 63 million votes. Look, the way that you try to overturn a president is by the ballot box, not by trying to usurp his authority through a highly politicized process where no one in the other party agrees with you or votes for you. I want to make this perfectly clear. In the Nixon beginning of impeachment before he resigned and the Clinton impeachment, it was a bipartisan consensus. This is highly partisan, one party trying to take out a president. This proves that the real goal here is to cast a shadow so wide and so far and so dark over the president as to drive away any voters who might be either weak supporters or on the fence, such as independents, or those who didn't vote for Donald Trump in 2016. This is the weaponization of the political process, and it takes a terrible precedent. And look, this will further divide the country, and it will do what Speaker Pelosi used to warn us about. Speaker Pelosi used to warn us about this in the 1990s during the Clinton impeachment, saying that this will now become a rule of thumb against people that you might disagree with. Well, now she's the one wielding that power. In March of this year, Speaker Pelosi has said that she would not move forward with impeachment unless it showed broad bipartisan support. And guess what? Justin Amash and Mitt Romney don't count. This is what she said. She said, quote, impeachment is so divisive to the country that unless there is something so compelling and overwhelming and bipartisan, I don't think we should go down that path because it divides the country. Pelosi said, if and when the time comes for impeachment, it will have to be something that has such a crescendo in a bipartisan way. House Minority Leader McCarthy rightly slammed Speaker Pelosi by saying this.
In March of this year, Speaker Pelosi said this about impeachment. Impeachment is so divisive to the country that unless there's something so compelling and overwhelming and bipartisan, I don't think we should go down that path because it divides the country. Today, the country just witnessed the only bipartisan vote on that floor was against. The question to the speaker are the same questions I provided in a letter about the unfair process that we had. What has changed since March? In all the hearings, there's nothing compelling, nothing overwhelming. So the speaker should follow her own words on what bipartisan vote on that floor and end the sham that has been putting this country through this nightmare. That's exactly what this vote shows today.
And McCarthy is so right. What has changed since March? But guess what? The Democrats' worst nightmare is happening. Across six battleground states opposing impeaching and removing Trump, 52 to 44%. Arizona, Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. The people are not behind this. The American people find this to be a politically motivated witch hunt. This is a Siena poll. Siena College, which is a pretty good polling service, pretty accurate, pretty fair, have said that a majority oppose impeaching and removing the president of the United States in states that really matter: Arizona, Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. So you know what this really means? That means that those people that side with impeachment, that means that people who side with the idea of removing, they're actually going to be harming themselves politically going into 2020. And guess what? Don't believe the national polls. The national polls mean nothing. They're highly weighted to try to make the president of the United States look bad. They're weighted to try to encourage Congress to go towards removal. Remember, this is a targeted coup to remove a duly elected president of the United States who won an election he was not supposed to win in a way that people did not ever think was going to happen. It's just like in the Democrat primaries. It's really about Iowa and New Hampshire, and the same with impeachment. It's all about the battleground states. That kind of nuance and that kind of perspective is so important because far too often we get so captured in this idea of just talking about national polls. Oh, national polls. But look, you have to remember that we are a collection of states. We are the United States of America. We have to say this more often, that the states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. And the states' voice actually are the ones that collectively come together and dictate the direction, the tone, and the leadership of the country. And just and overly weighting it in the idea of who Malibu and Manhattan care, how much they hate Trump. Well, look, the Trump-hating Olympics is ongoing. We understand that he's not popular in Malibu, Manhattan. But guess what? This idea of impeachment is not popular in Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. But it's also important to remember, Biden is up nationally, but he's still struggling in the early primaries. That's just one example that the national polls don't always tell the entire story. As I'm doing this right now, I'm looking at Mr. Producer, and he's wearing this watch, and he's smiling because he knows that it's time to talk about Vincero watches. Look, for all the guys listening to this podcast and for every person that knows a guy, and every person basically knows a guy, so it's every person listening to this podcast, you have to know that Vincero watches, they create exceptionally crafted watches because you know, our Mr. Producer right now is loving his watch. I don't see him without it. There's a reason why Vincero has over 18,000 five-star reviews. Can you believe it? 18,000 five-star reviews. It's because their modern timepieces masterfully blend fashion and function into one affordable timepiece. An exclusive deal for us. We partner with Vincero for this. They're offering 15% off your entire order with the code KIRK, K-I-R-K. Just head to VinceroWatches.com and use the code KIRK for 15% off. For daily wear, special occasions around the office, a classic wristwatch is something every man needs because they establish the person who's wearing them. That's you, as the most ambitious and interesting person in the room. And look, guess what? There have been styles that I have announced that have totally sold out. And Vincero has free worldwide shipping. So right now, go to VincerOWatches.com. That's VinceroWatches.com. Use the code KIRK for 15% off your entire order. And again, when I announce a style, it just sells out sometimes. So you got to go to VinceroWatches.com, VincerOWatches.com. Use the code KIRK. When I see you at the next Turning Point USA Campus Clash, and if you want to see them or come to some of our events, Student Action Summit, Great Lakes Regional Conference, TPUSA.com, I want to see you wearing those Vincero watches. I want to see those Vincero watches, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Use the code KIRK for 15% off your entire order. So this last weekend, I've been getting a lot of messages about this. I was at Politicon, and I was debating Kyle Kalinske from the Young Turks. Nice guy, and he got a little heated, which is fine. It's understandable. I don't take any of this stuff personally. It's all part of the fight. But he's pretty far left, and we had some great discussion and some great back and forth. I thought there were some parts I did really well, and I thought there were some parts that I could have done better. I will say this, and the overwhelming consensus online was this: I think I did really, really well in the economy. I mean, but look, in his defense, he was trying to go up on stage and say, "Oh, the Trump economy's not that good." I came very well prepared. Let's play the clip. And there were some huge differences between Kyle and I.
The economy is so good that even President Barack Obama is trying to take credit for it, right? I mean, we are seeing an economic renaissance, the likes of which is historic and unprecedented. We were through an economic malaise under President Barack Obama, and now we are seeing prosperity that is totally amazing. And whoever's to credit for it, Kyle, we can debate that back and forth, but the results are not to be debated. I have a packet of the most amazing economic success you could possibly imagine. It's a good thing that we have the lowest black unemployment, Latino unemployment, Asian unemployment, disabled unemployment, lowest ever black poverty rate. My favorite statistic, I'll close with this, 6 million people are no longer on food stamps and now in the labor market. That's 6 million people that don't have to go get food stamps anymore, thanks to President Donald J. Trump.
And look, here's some more facts on the economy in depth. And again, this is such a hard position for him to hold because he's basically saying, oh, no, things aren't that good. But anything that's good is Obama's, you know, it's for Obama's credit. And come on. But look, in Obama's last year, the unemployment rate remained basically unchanged. It was 4.9% in January 2016 and 4.8% when Trump took office in January 2017. Now it's down to 3.7%, a 50-year low. Black unemployment, Latino, Asian, disabled American, high school graduate, and female unemployment are all at record low levels. And to kind of be a little facetious about it, what exactly was it that Barack Obama did that caused unemployment not to just drop under President Trump, but to reach absolute record lows in nearly every category on the books? And so look, I came with just this packet full of numbers because there's no way you could possibly refute it. And again, my heart goes out to him. I wish he just would have said, yeah, the economy is great and free markets work wonderfully, but I don't like Trump because of these things. And then actually, I would have had more respect, but it's really hard to advocate for socialism. It's really hard to advocate for middle-income workers, and middle-income workers are actually doing better. So one of the things that Kyle Kalinske mentioned was that, oh, the middle class, you know, they're one emergency away from not having any money. And I didn't refute that. It's true. But thanks to President Trump, middle-class income has gone up dramatically. In fact, President Trump has seen average middle-class income go up $5,000 when it only went up, I think, $500 under 8 years of George W. Bush and $1,000 under 8 years of Barack Obama. And these are amazing increases. Then, of course, the debate shifted to foreign policy. We found a good amount of agreement there. I think we should end the endless wars, end the war in Afghanistan. But where we disagree, we didn't really get into this. I mean, he thinks we should lift the sanctions on Iran. I mean, Iran is the number one funder of terrorism across the world. Iran hates our guts. They hate Israel. I don't think we should lift sanctions on Iran, but I do think that we should end the foreign wars in the Middle East. I am not a neocon in that way. We went to culture. We tackled political violence, and honestly, it was a chance for us to come together, and it got more heated than it probably should have. I should have probably gone a step further and acknowledged that the right does have its own demons. I mean, it does have people on the very, very fringe of the, I don't even like to call them on the far right. I mean, these people are identitarian collectivists. They're not conservative. They're not individualists. They don't believe in Western society. They believe in this very bizarre form of European ethno-nationalism. So I don't even like to consider them on the right or on the left. They're just there. And these people include the Holocaust deniers and all these sorts of really fringe issue type people. And I do whatever I possibly can to confront that fringe whenever I come across it. People that dare trivialize the disaster of the Holocaust or people that believe horrible things about, you know, Jewish people. I just think that's horrible. So I probably could have done a better job to Kyle acknowledging that that exists out there. But the point was that the political violence and the intolerance is so predominant on the left that it should be the entire conversation should be about political violence on the left. And he didn't really believe that. And he got very, very upset. And I talk about Antifa. And I asked the question, where is conservative Antifa? Because they haven't been condemned. So let's play clip and you'll hear about that.
You only see political violence predominantly on one side, and that is Antifa. You do not see Trump supporters wearing Make America Great Again hats, waiting outside of Bernie Sanders rallies, punching them in the face. You do not see people wearing MAGA hats, assaulting gay journalists in the streets of Portland where no people are arrested. You do not see
white
people wearing
nationalist
MAGA hats,
terrorism,
punching left-wing people in the face. Something of which, very important point, Kyle. Guess what? I denounce it. The president denounces it. And yet half the people running for the Democrat Party have not denounced Antifa. Why do people running for the Democrat nomination not denounce Antifa?
Oh, yeah, bro.
A paramilitary organization that goes around and pounds people on the head if they dare disagree with them. Could you imagine for a second if people were wearing MAGA hats and going and beating journalists in the streets?
I can, because
they
did it as rallies.
They would be rightfully arrested.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about culture. Show me where conservative Antifa is. Show me a well-funded, well-organized an organization that was not denounced by the president or people like it that go after political opponents. You can't find it. And there's a reason why the Democrats will not denounce Antifa. It's because if you want to see the face of the Democrat Party, I'll show it to you. They're wearing a mask. Okay.
So on this point, we can, of course, go back to the Charlie Kirk Show after the tragedies in El Paso and Dayton. I went on the record and explained I don't blame Elizabeth Warren for the political violence perpetrated in her name in Dayton or the political violence that Bernie Sanders supported at the congressional baseball game. Again, I want to just make myself very clear. I thought I handled that fine. I probably could have handled it better and nuanced it. But just so you understand, many presidential candidates running for the Democrat nomination haven't condemned it. It's just so interesting, though, debating Kyle, because what he is programmed to say and believe is so different than what we as conservative libertarians say and believe, because Antifa is just not anywhere in their conversation. It's just, he was so stunned to even hear Antifa to think that it's even a threat when we at Turning Point USA encounter Antifa and the fringe left so often. And look, we have to also just understand that there are things that conservative libertarians can agree on, but there's also big things we disagree on. And so to just kind of get to the philosophy of it, there was this huge kind of divide that was created, which is that Kyle Kulinski was not able to admit that certain people have the right to earn money and to create value for other people. And he did embrace the position that there should be no billionaires. He believed in the position held by Bernie Sanders that billionaires should not exist. And I don't believe in that. I believe that people, that the creation of wealth is beneficial for all people, that you have to create a great product, take a risk in the marketplace, be an entrepreneur, employ a lot of people. You give a lot of money away. I think the creation of wealth is a good thing, and he thinks it's a bad thing. And that goes back to the Marxist theory of labor, basically saying that it's a zero-sum game out there, that if you have an economy that people are inherently being exploited and that people are being they're stealing money, that people are only getting money because they're robber barons, because they're not actually creating wealth at all. The second part of the debate, which I think is the most important, which I wish we could have focused on more, is that I believe I was totally and completely philosophically consistent in why I believe what I believe. I'm skeptical of government. That's why I'm skeptical of endless wars. I'm skeptical of gun confiscation. I'm skeptical of the government telling me what I can and cannot buy from grocery stores. I'm skeptical of centralized power, unaccountable centralized power. And I always try to err on the side of liberty and freedom. And that's not to say I don't think we should get rid of all government, but I try, when there's a problem, I try to err on the side of freedom and liberty. And that comes from a variety of different reasonable positions, not the least of which is that government power, when abused, is one of the most out of control, menaces in people's lives. It destroys civilizations. It destroys cultures. It destroys countries. It is very, very dangerous. And so I'm very consistent that I don't want the government in people's bedrooms. I don't want the government in people's businesses. I don't want the government in people's wallets. And that's also why I think when we have these endless wars overseas, when people try to play War King like it's a game of Risk, things don't turn out the way they should. However, Kyle considers himself to be a libertarian leftist. So he picks and chooses when he trusts government. So he doesn't trust government when it comes to drugs and war, but he does trust the government when it comes to guns and healthcare. I mean, it's the same incentive structure in government. Government is going to be inflated and bloated and inefficient, run by government, by bureaucrats, no matter where it is. We just have to come to an agreement and a consensus where we are willing to have that inefficient, bloated bureaucracy exist. I start by saying, okay, police, fire, rule of law, bridges, roads, safety net. That's basically where I come from. Kyle will go a step further and say, oh, government is horrible when it comes to drug enforcement. Government is horrible when it comes to declaring endless wars. And of course, military. I want to go back. I didn't mean to not mention military, but you understand what I'm saying. I believe in strong borders. I believe in all those things. Kyle philosophically starts to get on very uncertain footing when he starts to say, oh yeah, we should have universal health care, no more billionaires, but I also don't trust the government because they over-incarcerate people, and I don't trust the government because they're always declaring war on all these countries that we shouldn't. You have to be consistent in how you believe government's force can and should be employed. And we as conservative libertarians are inherently skeptical of unilateral power going to a specific government institution because that power can be abused. It can be put forth against people they disagree with. And eventually, we believe the best solutions come from free people pursuing their own self-interest in a free market. And we never say it's perfect. There's, of course, externalities. And the best way to address those externalities are by stronger communities, stronger churches, and stronger individuals. So you put it all together, you see a very interesting divide, and a healthy one at that, between the Rousseauian Marxist left and the Locke and the Smith individualists, which we are, that believe in the ideas of free enterprise and free markets and liberty and true limited government, not just limited government for the certain things that you personally think government does not do well, not just limited government on the particular list of items that you personally you think should be socially more libertarian and more accessible. It was a fun debate. I encourage you to check it out. We have it posted on a lot of our channels. We played a little sound of it here, and I will always enjoy debating a far left winger Marxist on why their ideas are so horrible and so disastrous for civilizations, countries, and for people and for the pursuit of human excellence. So that's all we got for you today on the Charlie Kirk Show. Please get engaged and involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. We are growing like you wouldn't believe. We have a record new amount of chapters. Our events are having amazing attendance. We have our Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS. Get engaged. Get involved with our effort. We are making a difference on the front lines of the culture war. We are bigger and stronger than ever before. We have records amount of students coming to our on-campus events. Chip in some money if you can. We are fighting the left on college campuses. And I just want to thank you all for your amazing support. Till next time, this is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Go to your podcast provider, type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, leave a review, give us that 5-star rating. Signing off. Thanks so much.